Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
I used to believe when I was a child in witches and werewolves and evil so wild. Back then, things went bump in the night, but now that I'm grown, the monsters are bright. They wear the faces of people who seem innocent and kind, and it's harder to know what goes on inside their mind. When the light of the day doesn't make the demons run, wolf wear sheep's clothing and get to have fun. So keep your eyes open. The danger is real, walking amongst us, waiting for its next meal. Not my words, but the awesome poetic words of our author of the week, Heather Gooden. Heather, good to connect with your good self. And that comes from your latest text, of course, which is Poetry in a Pandemic.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, hopefully I did some vague justice to the reading there. I will possibly ask you to read some of your own material as well. First of all, talk us through your decision to actually start putting some poetry together in a pandemic where literally the world seemed to be going to heck in a handbasket, and creativity was one of those challenges that lots of us tried to get involved with, but some obviously had more success than others, basically.
Well, I had been writing quite a bit leading up to it. I think 2019 was probably my most prolific year. I believe I ended up 19 published pieces altogether between short stories and novels, novellas, that kind of thing. And then the pandemic happened, and it was just almost as if my brain kind of went blank, and I was working on these things, and I just couldn't finish anything. So I decided that I would just make sure that every morning I started off writing a small piece, sort of that whole do something, don't just stand there. And initially I wrote between poetry and prose, and I just found the way my brain works in the morning before coffee seems to be in rhymes, and then just kind of continued from there. And at the end of the year, I realized, oh, that's 365 days of poetry. Some are better than others, but it's almost like a time capsule, I think, of where I was every day.
Now, what we didn't, of course, say, as well as being an ace author, you're also a family physician. So you were very much at the front line of the whole COVID crisis. Did that inspire you, or is inspire perhaps the wrong phrase to actually use when we start talking about having to cope with people wearing masks, vaccinations, and all the rest of the bits and pieces in Canada?
Well, I think in many ways, it definitely played in. I think even at the end of 2019 in December, I am sure many other people remember that minute when they built a hospital in a week in China. And that terrified me. I have a microbiology background prior to medical school, and that's never a good sign. And I mean, I think many people in healthcare have been waiting for the next big thing, probably for the last 30 years, but you're never ready when it happens. So,
well, I mean, certainly, I think there was an attempt in Britain in 2016 to have an exercise to see how well we would cope in the event of a pandemic. Result was not very well. But of course, typically British routine, we didn't do anything because it's never going to happen, is it? So there you go. Let's turn to our Romanian correspondent from Bucharest, of course, although she's currently in Lincoln, Anna Coșcanel. Anna, any questions you'd like to put to Heather, based as she is in the middle of Canada, I believe. Slap bang in the middle. Is that right, Heather?
Basically, we are about 2 hours from the geographical center of North America.
Okay. Anna.
Well, first of all, I would like to say that it's a pleasure to meet you, Heather. And I'm really glad to be here with you. And I always have many questions, but my first question would be, I read here that you say that while you reflect on life and everything, you feel that you can be light even in the darkest of days. Mm-hmm. And my question to you would be a bit of a deeper one. Do you feel like without poetry in your life, there would be no light at the end of the tunnel?
Ooh. I think if I couldn't write poetry, as long as I could write something, I would always be able to find that light. I think everybody has terrible things that happen, and life is a balance between the good and the bad. And when the bad things happen, they really highlight how amazing the good can be. And we appreciate the good a lot more because we know the difference. So poetry just helps me be a little shorter winded about it.
That's a beautiful way of explaining it. Another question about this would be, do you feel like it's a way of venting and journaling your experiences in life for you?
Oh, absolutely. And, I've sort of been a journaler off and on since I was a kid. And I always found that when life was more challenging, that is when I was more on with the journaling. And again, I will start off writing something and then it just kind of turns into a poem or something. And probably some of my greatest writing inspirations have been poets who, sometimes were family doctors. So it's funny how that kind of goes along with medicine, the need to write to express the things we experience.
Maybe it goes hand in hand.
The power of the word, of course. If we can have a just dial back slightly to monsters, which is what we launched with from that point of view. That line, which was so keep your eyes open, the danger is real, walking amongst us, waiting for its next meal. Looked at now, I can see it. Well, obviously you're writing about COVID. Was that what you were writing about, or was that a case of no, that's an irrelevancy? And frankly, whatever the reader makes can be whatever the reader makes of it.
I mean, I think depending on which month that was in, it could be a little bit about COVID, probably also a little bit about the political situation where I was living at the time, how they were, for lack of a better word, undermining primary care in general. And I mean, I found it very challenging because my Scottish grandmother was big on the whole, the pound wise and the penny foolish, or
Penny
and
wise,
it,
pound foolish.
yeah, and it just seemed like they were doing it the other way
Yeah.
because, here we throw money at operations and this and that, but we're not willing to make sure that people have clean drinking water and food and education and things that cost pennies but save so much down the road. And I wish that we could learn from that. Historically speaking, we don't seem very good at it, but I think a lot of it is to do with the people that, they look good on paper, they're shiny and they've got, the audience, but they're just there to make themselves money, to take your money, to, help themselves out, not to
Yeah, we
help
won't talk about
others.
the pharmaceutical industry at this stage, Heather. Otherwise, we could be off for another whole line entirely.
Yeah.
That's a whole new routine. I must admit, I did like from your biography that you were often told that your handwriting was atrocious, but you persisted, and upon discovering computers and learning how to type, you realized that you were no longer limited by your admittedly messy writing. Surely, being a doctor and a family practitioner, it's an essential, it's part of the job, isn't it? Nobody can actually understand what the prescription is except the pharmacist.
Well, you see, now we have EMR, so everything is printed, but
Yeah.
also I discovered that part of the messy writing might have been because I did my homework on the way to school on the school bus, and it was gravel bumpy roads with potholes. So could have been the procrastination more than the messy, but
Well,
that
the open.
makes two of us.
Yes,
I
was enough time. It was half an hour.
think this is for some people, they create better and they give better results under pressure rather than doing it on a longer period of time.
Yes, I definitely think there can be that last minute motivation, and that's possibly why the poetry is so appealing, is because you do have a bit of a time deadline in the morning, and I want to do one before I have to go to work. So they just seem to kind of pop out almost fully formed sometimes that way.
Are you doing one every single day?
Yes, actually, I have probably about 4 years worth now.
That's amazing.
So.
Oh, looks well. It's 7 years, of course, Heather, since Dream of Darkness actually emerged, the adventures of a group of girls fighting evil. Talk us through that and what kind of led you to Dream of Darkness.
So that is actually based on a recurring dream I'd had probably since middle school myself. I weird synchronicity. I currently live in the same place that I was born and raised, but that hospital isn't there anymore. And I think it was probably when I was young, I had pneumonia when I was about 7. And I suspect I was left to my own devices because that was back in the 80s. And small hospitals, I don't think, watched their inpatients all that closely. And I think I made it into the basement and I was terrified of just how creepy and, horror movie like that was. So that inspired the initial pieces of the book. And then I think Kat, the main character's healing powers probably come a lot from what I wish I could do in medicine and might be more wish fulfillment. So, started as a nightmare, ended in wish fulfillment.
I'm often struck by how medical doctors very much see themselves as not just healers, but actually teachers, that actually the role of medicine, as well as obviously to do no harm, the Hippocratic Oath, is very much designed to almost teach people that the body is a remarkable device. It does have a capacity to heal, but again, you need to take us through this. Do you feel that in the history of medicine, we have progressed? I mean, the pandemic might say we've regressed, if anything, because I know there was very little difference at one stage between the pandemic doctors and, of course, those Italians in the 14th century who were saying it's all down to the influence of the planets, hence influenza. And that was their response to everything. Do you feel as though we have progressed, or again, is it something that, as a species, we're still on a learning curve? Just as gangrenous limbs used to be cut off to save a lot of lives, now you need to actually rethink diet and issues relating to diabetes and so on.
I think in many ways we've advanced. Pasteur and the original germ theory, I think, very much influenced where we are currently. Without all of the advances in science and technology, I don't think we would be anywhere near where we are now. But that being said, I think back in the 50s and 60s, this idea of being able to separate the mind and the body into, a mechanical thing, I think maybe they need to rethink some of that because, as we all know, you can't separate your mind and your body or your spirit or whatever you call it. We are a complete vessel. And so I think it's really important if we build on the lessons from, 20,000 years ago, because in many ways we've lost the basics. No one gets their vegetables, nobody gets enough sleep and water. And I mean, these things, I tell patients these things, but that's not why they're coming to me, right? They want the, a solution or a cure. And for many people, the cure would be to sleep and rest and eat vegetables and self-care. But again, that's not flashy. So we live in a society, unfortunately, that is making everybody sick.
Well, speaking of needing to get some sleep, as I've frequently regarded, sent several emails saying, get some sleep. Anna, any thoughts on this one?
I feel personally attacked with the sleeping part. When you're talking to your patients, has any of your patients, or did you give to any of your patients poems of yours to read?
So I keep my work and my writing separate. There is, of course, crossover because I'm in a small town, and many of my patients, both for where I am now and where I used to live, I would probably say they may be my biggest fans next to my mom. But I don't talk about that at work because at work, my role is to be the doctor and to help others. When I'm writing, that's I mean, I'm always happy when other people enjoy it, but that's to help myself. That's how I heal. That's how I process, because caring for other people means that you will have good days and bad days. And I think we all need a way to express that. And sometimes it's a very lonely place to be as a family physician because we carry other people's secrets. And, we're supposed to be some, magical, impermeable person. And yet we're just people. We have our own, lack of sleep issues, our own sometimes just eating pizza every day, families, So I think it's important to have that balance. And I think it makes me a better person and a better doctor to be able to write.
Out of every poem that you wrote, what's your favorite one?
That's a
Oh,
tough question. That's a very
it's
tough
like
question.
picking my favorite kid, and they're listening from the other room, so I better not try that. I think the day that I write them, they're all my favorite because they are all exactly what I need at that time. Some definitely do stick out more when I reread them. And some of them I'm like, ooh, that's not very good. But again, they're all my creations, and it's definitely hard to choose.
That's really beautiful, and it's a beautiful answer. I didn't expect it, to be honest.
In terms of poetry versus prose, we've spoken to an awful lot of poets over the years, we've spoken to an awful lot of prose writers, and oftentimes they say they couldn't do poetry, they couldn't do prose. You seem to have managed to combine both. So what's the secret, Heather?
Time, I think, and probably just it's just one of those things. I think it was a game that I used to play when I was a kid, and I actually have, unfortunately or fortunately, I've taught my kids that they walk around and they rhyme almost everything. So it's almost like a little word game. And definitely when I'm running short on time, I tend to lean towards poetry, but when I have more time, prose is kind of like sinking into a deep, warm pool, and you just want to stay there. So sometimes I don't want to start prose if I know I have a short time, because then I feel sort of cheated out of that luxurious feeling that you get with prose.
Well, there's one excerpt that I'd like to just share now, which is December the 13th, and it's so poignant, I think, but at the same time, it's almost got a haiku-esque quality to it. It's called Clarity. Clarity. Disappointment is the distance between expectations and reality. Clarity is knowing we can decide how far that distance will be.
Yeah. And I think that definitely I was rethinking where I was. And this is prior to everything being shut down with the pandemic. But again, that's to do with the government deciding that primary care wasn't worth what it was being paid. And they ended up tearing up the contract and unilaterally deciding to pay us about, for family doctors and clinic, about 50% less, which meant that I had to decide what I was going to do.
And certainly that notion of the way in which our society actually operates, it does seem as though sometimes we miss the point. We actually miss where the real heroes are, that you have sports stars who will be earning literally in a day what family doctors will be making perhaps over 5 years in certain
Oh,
instances.
I'd love that. If I made that, I mean, I think there's so many people that their work is invaluable. The people that pick up the trash every day, we would all have rats running in the streets with more plagues if we didn't have that. The people that make sure that the kids are safe in the daycare. I think we really need to reevaluate as a society what our goals are. Do we want everybody out there to be aiming to get as rich as they can? Or do we want something more like I saw a concept, the donut economy, which really appeals to me because your outside of the donut is what the environment can hold. The purpose isn't growth for growth's sake. And then the base, the bottom of the donut, the inside ring is what are the basic needs every human deserves and needs? Food, shelter, education, love, supports, right? And it would be such a wonderful world if that was the kind of things that we as a society valued. And until then, I will keep agitating
Fighting
from
and
poetry corner.
fighting the good fight. Let's move on to a slightly more hopefully upbeat topic, which is that of music. We'll be following this interview with a feature with Jennifer Bertolo, who's in charge of Visit Louisiana. She's it's going to be singing the praises of Louisiana's bayou music and so on. We often ask authors, do they like to have a soundtrack to listen to? Do they like absolute silence? Do they like only classical music? Do they like music without lyrics, with lyrics, or none of the above? Heather, what's your own particular take when it comes to that artistic form that, as Shakespeare once said, soothes the savage breast?
I can't really say that I listen to music when I'm writing. I tend to use silence. I find it's too distracting. I've tried to write with music in the background, and then I end up writing down the words of the song. So that doesn't work for me. That being said, I do have the ongoing soundtrack for the Shrek musical in my head right now because we're doing a local play at the end of April. So as much as I write in silence, sometimes that radio keeps playing in my head anyway.
So I'm a Believer, featured with Shrek at all, the Monkees
That
classic,
is
or
in there. Yep. Actually, it is a really good soundtrack in the sense that it is all about being individual and unique and that being totally fine the way it is. So if you haven't seen that musical, you can watch it on YouTube, I think, or it's out there on various platforms for free. And it really has a great message.
Absolutely. And in terms of technology, are you exploring the joys of TikTok, or is it a case of no? Do you not realize that's been banned for under 14-year-olds in the United States, or at least in certain states?
I have not signed up for TikTok yet, and I do not plan to. I have a very low threshold for getting stuck in the scrolling rabbit holes, so I kind of limit my social media as much as possible, and I mostly would say Instagram and Facebook, but Instagram keeps selling me things I didn't know I needed, so I have to be careful there too. And then Facebook, I would say, is probably how I connect more with friends and family. So not big on social media, mostly due to a lack of time and knowing that I don't have the self-control required to just do 10 minutes.
The last thing you wanted was when your patients come to see you on a surgery and you say, just hold it for a minute. I just got to scroll through my social media here. That's not a good
Yeah,
look, really.
it's not. I that being said, I do use a lot of web search things to show pictures to patients because I find that if there is one thing that has made my life easier, it's being able to show a person the body part that we're discussing. Because I don't know about you, but a doctor using all these words is like, wah, wah, wah.
Well,
But if you see a
corpus
picture, you're like,
callosum,
oh,
medulla oblongata,
yeah.
pancreatic synapse, it's all there. It's
I
wonderful
always
stuff.
think of the Charlie Brown movies from when I was a kid, and all of the adults just went, wah, 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 wah. And that's kind of what people hear sometimes. So, pictures, you just point and you're like, that area. Oh, okay, I get it. Yeah, it works very well.
Anna,
You can
back
make a
yourself.
poem for each part of the body to give it to patients. I think that would work.
Yeah, but then there would need to be music to that, I think.
Yes, there was an episode in a children movie that was like that. She was learning the body parts and she made a song. I don't think you know what I'm referring to, and I don't know
Well,
if I'm allowed to say
head
it
and
here.
shoulders, knees and toes. Is that the one? Yeah, I think that one goes around the world and in different languages, but I think every kid learns that one for sure.
That's a question. Going back to what you were saying before about the pandemic and how it changed people's views and how history repeats itself and people don't learn from it. Do you feel like your writing changed during the pandemic rather than and your feelings towards it and the way you were expressing yourself? Because people tend to be more I don't think thoughtful, but they tend to express themselves more in writing and only to themselves rather than to other people nowadays. So do you feel like you stopped expressing yourself to others and put everything in writing now? And that's why you're writing every day before going to work?
I think I started writing back in 2015. I did write in high school and before medical school. But in 2015, I started writing with that initial goal of writing a blog because I really felt there was something missing in my life. I had finished school, I worked all the time, I had 3 kids in under 4 years, and it just always felt like it was me doing for others or giving to others, and I just never had any me left in the day. And so when I started, it was to explore what was I thinking, what was I feeling, who was I? And so in a sense, I don't think that my writing has changed all that much because it still serves those purposes. But of course, depending on what's happening from day to day, I would say that the tone and the content will change. And then I guess the other big thing is I just don't have as much free time right now because we did move back rural. So I went from working more of a normal 40 or 50 hour week, which other people do when I had small kids. So that's part time for a doctor, back to, 100, 140 hour weeks. So it doesn't leave
Well,
as much.
there are 168 hours in a week, so I mean, actually having 28 hours for sleep, that's
Oh, that's
it's fair enough, really, isn't it, really?
so some weeks I do 168 if you count the call. I'm not awake for all of it, but theoretically they could call me during it.
Oh
So
my God.
yeah, I
I
actually
went.
Saturday was my first day off in 20 days, so
I will never complain ever in my life.
oh, we can always complain. It's
But
okay.
what I wanted to say that I realized while you were telling us about how you're writing and everything. So basically, if everyone is going to take every single piece of your poetry and your poems, we're going to get pictures of your life from every single day, which is
Basically.
beautiful.
Yeah. And I actually, a friend of mine, when I told her that I was going to release this as a book, she actually said, oh, it's like a time capsule. And yeah, I mean, really, I can't think of a better way to explain it. It's birthdays, it's holidays, it's, anger at the political situation, it's fear. It's basically all of my life in that morning snapshot. So whatever was on my mind on that day.
That's
Create create
beautiful.
creating magic in the mundane, to quote the strapline, which is always good. Are you an aficionado of books, as in solid books that you hold in one's hand and actually experience, or are you more of a Kindle person?
I use both for a variety of reasons. So for sheer enjoyment, I don't think anything beats curling up with a physical book. I tend to like paperback better than hardcover just because you can kind of like really get into the paperback and the hardcover is a little bit more proper with you. I listen to audiobooks a lot while I drive because then I can listen to, I would say, more nonfiction that way because you get those 30-minute thought chunks and you can kind of process it while you're moving in space, which we all know you can get great ideas when you're moving in space. And then at night, I tend to do the Kindle just because it's easier to hold and I can put it on the black screen and then the room is dark around me. So.
Moving in space and time, of course, which brings us neatly to the next question. What would you say to the 12-year-old Heather Gooden if you could actually use that time machine to actually give some words of advice or words of wisdom or just anything really? What would you relay?
I would say just keep being yourself. I hate quoting Shrek, but definitely there's a line in one of the songs, what makes you different makes you strong.
Who would have thought that we'd actually be utilizing Shrek as a modus operandi for the 20th to the 21st century?
I think it's a great.
The simple things.
And you know what? I think every kid needs to know that you can be unique, you can be that oddball, you can just be yourself. And that's what the world needs. It needs people who are themselves, not trying to be somebody else.
And that at 12 years old or 13, you might be embarrassed because you like some things, but when
Yeah.
you're as soon as you're gonna turn 21 or 22, you're gonna realize that there's no reason to be embarrassed about those things. And it's just be yourself. Nobody cares because we're here for the first time trying our best, all of us.
And I mean, every day, that's all anybody could do is just their best. And some
Exactly.
days that's good, and some days it's not as good. But if you did your best, that's really all anyone can do.
Have you made it to Europe, Heather? Have you actually sort of done
Have.
the grand trip as yet? You mentioned obviously the Scottish background. Have you? I
I
mean, in honor of
tagged
that, we've put up
along.
a castle behind you from Edinburgh. So there you go.
Yeah, so I tagged along. My brother has a education in music degree, so he actually works as an opera singer in Montreal, and he was in the University Singers for the University of Manitoba. So I tagged along with them while I was doing my science degree, and we went to Europe for 2 months. So we did the first 3 weeks was Italy and Germany and Switzerland with all of the big old stuff there, and we had to go to the Alps, of course. And then the last month, my brother and I took off, and we ended up being so exhausted by then that we stayed at a place a couple hours out of Glasgow with people we'd never met. That was my cousin's boyfriend's brother and sister-in-law. We stayed there for a week, and we just kind of crashed. And that's where we read Harry Potter and learned how to say Hermione correctly. And and then we went to the Menzies Castle because that's my maiden name is Menzies or Mengus, depending on where you are. And then as an adult, I've been to Istanbul and Egypt, and I drink the water everywhere just to taunt it, and I have not died yet. So,
But
yeah.
clearly, Romanian Bucharest and possibly Lincoln, England need to be on your
I
agenda as well.
haven't been, I might have been to Lincoln. I know we went to a few places. We've been to Chester, and I think we drank at a pub in Newbury once. We just sort of ended
That's
up
very bold, Heather. Very bold indeed.
at that
Very
was
daring.
the decade of the Red Bull vodka before it was taken away.
Yeah,
I thought it was a terrible idea back then, and that was prior to medical school. So,
It's for the plot.
It's yeah, it's a bad combo there, but I haven't been to Bucharest yet. It's on my
Well,
list.
that's good. You should most definitely visit it, and not only Bucharest, but the countryside part of Romania as well. It's beautiful.
Oh, I want to go everywhere, but then I had this problem called children, and they're expensive to travel with, and they know that they can't go anywhere till they'll eat the food wherever we go. So a few years, I
Indeed. And how can people actually locate you online, Heather? How's the best way of actually finding your details and so on?
So probably best place to get me is just with my name, HM Gooden. I have a website that probably needs updating. It's been a weird 4 years.
It's a time capsule.
It is a little bit. I don't actually know if the recent book is out there yet because, again, yeah, I've been a little distracted with work,
Well,
but
poetry in a pandemic certainly is, and
oh,
that's
perfect. But I did update it.
worth
That was
accessing.
good of
Yes,
me.
indeed.
Yeah.
And likewise, Passages, of course, is also available, and well worth accessing as well from that point of view. May you find the words on these pages as much a balm to guide you through rocky seas as they have been for your good self, which is excellent stuff. Heather, it's been awesome connecting with your good self. Two final questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today?
I've enjoyed every minute of it.
So therefore, can we prevail upon you, subject to obviously, using some of those 168 hours a week when you're not actually seeing patients doing all the rest of its pieces and writing, will you be kind enough to join us again sometime?
I would absolutely love to. Yes.
Heather Gooden, HM Gooden, we salute you. Take care now.
Thank you, and you as well.
Good morning, birds. Good morning, trees. Oh, what a lovely day. The sun's so big, it hurts my eyes. But really, that's okay. A brand new day with things to do. So many plans to make. I've had 6 cups of coffee, so I'm really wide awake. I've always been a morning person, a morning girl. Hooray! Cheep, 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 cheep. Hooray! Cheep, 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 cheep.
To follow me.
Well, I think you may need to change your tune, mister.
Hey, give me my flute back.
Hey!
Louisiana of the Blue Bayou, all of those wondrous things. We've spoken in the past on the show about the Louisiana Film Commission. We've heard a whole variety of other things, and we're going to go on today to actually talk with travel expert Jennifer Bertelot about how Louisiana is very much ahead of the game when it comes to music as well, specifically when it comes to Cajun music. How are you, Jennifer?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Excellent. So Let's just kind of focus a little bit more because music, clearly, it's in the soul of Louisiana. It's the birthplace of jazz, zydeco, Cajun, swamp pop, etc. It's inspired genres ranging from blues and country to hip hop, gospel, rap, and rock and roll and more. I mean, it's amazing. You ever need to go anywhere else other than Louisiana for music, isn't it?
Yeah, you really don't. I mean, if I had to argue, you can absolutely go anywhere in Louisiana and experience all the kinds of music that you could possibly want to hear. I mean, like you said, we created most of it, or we've inspired it so heavily that you can really trace all of the strong impacts of Louisiana and our many, many talented artists through the history of the evolution of music. We have more Grammy winners per capita than any other state in the US, or nominees per capita than any other state in the US.
And of course, that's is one of the reasons why it's important that this year, 2024, you're celebrating a year of music. So, how's it been going so far?
It's been going great. You know, we had a celebration. We kicked it off at the Rose Parade in Pasadena on New Year's Day, well and proper, with a wonderful music performance inspired by Mardi Gras. We've done a celebration at the Grammys. We are looking forward to spending the rest of this year continuing to share all of the different types of music that we have. You know, not everybody is familiar with Cajun or Zydeco music and that style and genres that are really unique to South Louisiana. And so we're really excited to get people to understand it. You know, when we tell people that we're the home of swamp pop, a lot of people say, "What?" and don't know about that unique version of music that is a blend of Cajun with up and coming rock and roll at the time in the 1950s.
Now, you may well have heard of bands like the Rolling Stones, the Foo Fighters, Chris Stapleton, and Stephen John Baptiste. But in terms of that, they're also forming key parts of the upcoming Festival International de Louisiana in April. So share with us a bit more information about that, please.
Yeah, so Louisiana, we're home to over 400 festivals. And among some of our most famous are, of course, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival and Festival International de Louisiana in Lafayette. And so those are two really amazing festivals that are just days and days of different music. You can see fabulous top-tier artists like what you've mentioned, or international musicians from all over the globe. Festival International is the largest free international festival in the world. Our music festival in the world. So it's a great opportunity to really take in all of the different types of music and see how they all interact together and how you can track some of our influences and how they've influenced us right back.
I see 71% of British folks say that a city's musical heritage is a key attraction, in which case it's a no-brainer, isn't it? I mean, it's not New York, it's not Los Angeles. You've got to head for Louisiana, surely.
Absolutely, you know, and our music is one of the things that's really special about it is, you know, Cajun and Zydeco and Swamp Pop, they're all music that inspires you to get up and dance. They're not sit down and listen to it music. They are full of the joie de vivre and that love of life that Cajuns and Louisianans are really known for. So they're designed for you to get up and do a two-step and really enjoy yourself and live life to that fullest. And if you don't know how to dance, you're probably going to find a local who will just scoop you up and teach you if you're sitting too still while that music is playing.
Jazz Fest takes place between April 25th and May 5th in New Orleans, or technically, I suppose, New Orleans. Is that also, again, one of those wonderful annual events that is unmissable and should be on anybody's bucket list?
Absolutely. You know, that is a terrific festival. It is always a great time. You know, it takes place over 8 days, 2 weekends. And has just some of the best lineup of music that you're going to experience, and some of the best festival food you're going to experience. You know, you'll get two things at every single one of our festivals, and that is wonderful and delicious food. So there is some famous dishes that are unique to our festivals that you have to come out and try.
Okay, Jennifer, give us some ideas. Is it more than just fried chicken? Are there more sort of wonderful things that you've actually got there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're talking about some delicious, you know, shrimp quesadillas, alligator tacos, all kinds of great things. You know, you can get crawfish. We have fresh daiquiris that are being made at our festivals, and it is splendid.
And what about your own favorite style of music, Jennifer? I mean, do you have any particular favorites which without which you'd think, no, my life would be a little bit less colourful.
Ooh, you know, I do love a Zydeco rhythm because it does get you up and get you excited and fill you with energy. A lot of the artists they're very vivacious and full of that spirit, and they will get you going and get you thrilled and excited to be part of the party. And so that is always a really fun genre. I think the whole world would probably be a little bit sadder without it.
So Zydeco music in the sort of full genre. Any named artist you'd go for? Or is it just a case of just any Zydeco be fine?
Oh God, there are so many. So I'm hard pressed to pick one out and make everybody else sad, but definitely I think so. Zydeco centers around that accordion, so it's really got that, that energy behind it. And we've had some really, really great ones throughout the years. Clifton Chenier, who is deceased now, but was a fabulous artist and set the stage for a lot of people. Terrence Simeon is a wonderful Zydeco artist that travels all over the globe and plays music and has a Grammy. So those are just a couple, one current and one history maker that are some among some of the best.
Okay, so where can people go to if they're listening to this and you've sold them, Jennifer? They need to actually forget about any other states in the union, literally in this election year, make a beeline to Louisiana. How do they find out more details?
Absolutely. So people can visit explorelouisiana.com, and that has all of our festival lineup for the rest of the year on all 400 of those. It has a lot of information about our various types of music and where you can find them, different live venues, and how you can explore the state.
And whereabouts in Louisiana do we find you today, Jennifer, or are you actually over in Britain?
I'm actually here in Britain with you
Wow.
guys.
There you go. You see, here was I worried about time difference and various other bits and pieces. And lo, you're actually, oh, well, behold, here, recruiting for the whole system. So, how does it compare then, just out of interest, Britain to Louisiana in terms of, is it just a case of they're so down, those Brits?
I actually love coming to the UK. You guys are great. You're one of my favorite markets. Don't tell anybody else. And y'all are just so much fun. Y'all are always really game for a laugh with us. And so we love having you, talking to you guys, showing you guys how to dance, and having y'all down to visit.
There you go. Travel expert Jennifer Bertolo, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on, and we'll catch up with you doubtless at the next Visit Louisiana package.
Great. We'll see you then.
Thank you. Is the case that the family that cooks together stays together or eats together stays together? Well, we might find out over the next few moments because we've got ace comedian and presenter extraordinaire Catherine Ryan to join us. How are you, Catherine?
I'm very well this morning, Alex. How are you?
I'm good. Now, we're talking today about a fascinating survey that's combining gusto with a well-known Australian cartoon character. And it has to do with cooking and what our children would actually eat and how they would eat it, et cetera, et cetera. Were you surprised by any of the findings that have come out of this one, Catherine?
No, because I feel like I am bang in the middle of this survey in my own life. My kids are really, really picky at mealtime. I'm making three different dinners in an evening without this Bluey-inspired gusto range because everyone is scattered. The babies have to eat at 5. My daughter doesn't get in until 6:30. She's a teenager. And then my husband and I find ourselves eating at 10 o'clock some nights. And this is wonderful because there are really fresh, healthful, delicious meals that the whole family can enjoy. But crucially, my kids aren't throwing my cooking on the floor.
Well, that's good to hear. But 85% of parents, it would seem, are looking for ways to make mealtimes more exciting. Now, short of inviting Catherine Ryan round to actually sort of entertain the whole thing, which I'm sure will be wonderful. Maybe we could actually use holographic Catherines or hologram versions of yourself to provide that. What's the solution to actually putting those adventures on the plate? I mean, is it pasta planes and cheese mountains?
Well, I was feeling really dejected about that. I don't love what my son would prefer to have for dinner, which is sometimes just plain pasta and tomato sauce. But he recognizes Bluey as a really fun, funny character. And these recipes are so wonderful because there's so much variety and he can get involved. And it is really making him broaden his dinner times because I think that when you bring kids into the kitchen and cook with them and explore all the different ingredients, it can make them feel more comfortable being adventurous.
And this is clearly, as I say, one of the reasons why Gusto have actually partnered up with the world-famous animated TV series Bluey. I was interested to see that Bluey is the number one fictional character that children wanted to actually invite for dinner. Spider-Man and Peppa Pig come in to second and third place. I mean, would you have a favourite fictional character, Catherine, you would have liked to have actually shared your dinner time with?
Oh my gosh, I love so many real characters that seem fictional. Someone like Joan Rivers, I would have loved to invite round. But also, I feel really encouraged that cartoons for children and animated series are so funny. They're finally scripting them for adults. Bluey understands that it is the parents who have to watch these cartoons over and over again. And I think it speaks to us so often. And I think it's the perfect partnership with Gusto because you would think of Gusto as these really amazing, delicious, adventurous meals for adults, but they've shown that they're for everyone and also for kids with this cheesy pasta that my son will eat, and pizzas, delicious fish goujons. And so, I mean, I think as much as Gusto is for everyone, Bluey is for the whole family too. And I would love to invite Bluey around for dinner. He's hilarious, or she's hilarious. And the dad to me is so funny. It's just the perfect portrayal of a fun family dad.
Well, I'm sure if the BBC and ABC are listening, clearly Catherine Ryan and Bluey has to be a series that needs to be made. That's another issue. You mentioned obviously about the way in which you structure mealtimes in the Ryan household and so on. What's been the best thing that your children have actually said to you, or do they keep very quiet? Do they actually kind of reserve the compliments for the chef until basically they feel no one's listening?
Well, they've said some horrible things about my cooking, actually. My son the other day said, "Mommy's cooking tastes like dirt." I feel like the worst
Wow.
insult. Yeah, my daughter, who's one, she's a lot better with adventurous eating than my son, but she'll just chuck it right on the ground. But
Right.
actually, yeah, I got them eating some pork spring rolls from the Bluey-inspired range, and they loved them. They recognize that it's something different, but it's the perfect finger food size for a baby to pick up. And they really liked getting the pastry out and making them themselves. And so I feel like that was the greatest compliment. I never thought that I'd get these picky kids, probably the fussiest eaters I've ever come across, asking for seconds of pork spring rolls. So that was great.
Yeah, well, that's good news there. So clearly, this partnership is actually working. Anything else you'd like to add about the new range that we've alluded to in this little piece, Catherine?
I mean, I really just think that it is important for families to get together at dinner time. It has transformed our evenings. I think parents can get really stressed. The day feels long and the night feels even longer. But if you can get everyone fed at the same time, everyone coming together for mealtime, I think it is really transformative for your family peace.
Well, there you go. And for further information, where would you point folk?
People can go to the Gusto website or follow them on Instagram, and all the recipes are available for free online.
And clearly, when you're not actually dealing with your family cooking, you are slowly but surely conquering the world. Where can people actually locate your good self, Catherine Ryan? What's the next exciting adventure that you've got lined up for your own particular life story?
Well, now that I've got everyone in a good dinner time evening routine, I can go back on tour. I'm going to be visiting loads of towns and cities in the UK starting this autumn. I'm going to Europe as well, if you happen to be listening from Berlin, Ireland, Wales, Scotland. I'm so excited.
The Catherine Ryan World Tour coming soon in this particular year, which is wonderful. Catherine Ryan, as ever, keep on keeping on and enjoy your mealtimes.
Nice to hear from you today, Alex. Thanks for letting me come by.